Write that. Write that down, Fumi Saito.
Oh, hello. From Burbank, California. We're back. New episode for you this week. Eventful weekend, both Fumi-san and I had this past weekend. Did you see Pro Wrestling Noah's Yokohama Arena event this weekend? Did you see Bye Bye Muta? If you saw it, you saw Jinsei Shinzaki or Hakushi, who's the subject of our episode today. We didn't talk about it in the air, actually, but what I realized after we finished talking was this guy, Jinsei Shinzaki Hakushi, he never won an important singles match. You know what I mean? He never won a big singles championship. He never had that moment. And still, we're talking about him. Yet still, we remember all of his big moments. Hakushi didn't wrestle as much as a lot of the wrestlers that we talk about often on this show. And he was just as important behind the scenes as he was in the ring. Maybe more important backstage, as we come to learn in this episode, from being a part of Jack, J-A-C, Sonny Chiba's acting stuntman union, to the early days UWA Japan, Michinoku Pro, Lucha Pro Wrestling combination, the early hybrid. He was a part of that. He was a part of WWF. A very interesting time. And we talked a lot about the WWF Mania tour that was in Japan in 94, which is very interesting. And if you go on YouTube or Daily Motion, you might be able to check some of those bouts out that we talk about. This guy's very interesting. Yeah, and again, we saw him, and I think he was the MVP of the match this weekend, with him and Akira and Naomi Jimura Fuji taking on Sting and Darby Allin and Great Muta. We talked about why he's special and why he's different and important. And a lot of what makes him unique is what he has done and who he is out of the ring. Mentoring Kano. Starting Tokushima Ramen. Helping start Sendai Girls. Teaching a stretching class for old folks. Who is this guy? Sakushi. Jinsei Shinzaki. We talk about him today. Before we get into all of that, please subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed on Spotify or Apple, wherever you're listening to your podcast. It helps us very much. Very much. Please enjoy this week's episode. We'll be back next week. Brand new episode. Lots of exciting things happening in the next month or so. We'll have some nice announcements for you. Until then, enjoy today's episode talking about Hakushi, Jinsei Shinzaki. And we're going to come into a conversation from Sean and I had talking about the mid-90s. Let's get started.
Mid-90s. But around the time, though, in Japan, Japanese wrestling fans weren't so interested in American wrestling scene. That hurt, too. Mm-hmm. I was making all American pages every week in, week out, for weekly pro wrestling, Shukan Pro Wrestling magazine, every week. Mm-hmm. And I had almost had to fight to get the pages, you know, because it's like, well, nobody wants to read that. So, yeah, they do, too, you know.
It was a time when New Japan and All Japan were much hotter than WWF at the time. Wrestling in mid-90s was a low point.
But if you give Japanese audience a chance to watch Monday Night Raw or Monday Nitro, for that matter, the cable TV, the Sky Perfect TV, the, you know, satellite TV started like in 97, 98. People started catching up. Then pretty soon there were, you know, Japanese audience were watching Stone Cold and Rock. Pretty soon. But it was like a gap that the, while Shinzaki was working WWF, Japanese fan weren't paying all that much attention about American pro wrestling. Yeah. And NWO felt closer because there was a more link with WCW and New Japan and Chono, NWO member, going back and forth and back and forth with the same logo, NWO in NWO Japan and NWO in America, and just felt a little closer than far away WWF. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there was a connection between, you know, there was NWA title there for a little bit. There was always a little bit of familiarity. There was the Fujinami Flair match a couple of years before. It wasn't too, like you said, it was a little bit familiar.
Yeah, yeah.
Fans would say, Fujinami, oh, I know these guys.
Flair match in Florida, St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. That, was that a great, what was the name of the show that, Brawl?
Brawl for All?
Super Brawl, yeah.
Super Brawl. Oh, yeah. In the Tokyo Dome.
And 3 months after that, back to Florida, Flair against Fujinami one more time in Florida. Yeah. And but so WCW and New Japan had a working relationship, so Japanese fans thought that the WCW was a little closer than you know, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels at the time. But Shinzaki was the one who was in that package. Yeah. But he came back in 96 and went right back to Michinoku Pro Wrestling. But 96, now we're talking about the Tokyo Dome match that you know went back and watched. Great Muta against Hakushi at the Tokyo Dome.
That's right.
That was the original, you know, like sequence of what we just witnessed last week.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah, I think some things were transposed, like, you know, going back and watching the Tokyo Dome match again, you see Great Muta knock Jinsei's or Hakushi off the apron onto the table.
He flew onto the table.
Yeah. We saw it one more time, but this time Sting did it.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah, because Great Muta is very careful about, you know, these spots. If you... Okay, it's about the match Great Muta and Shinsuke Nakamura in January 1st. There was a few spots that Great Muta against Antonio Inoki, that Inoki's, you know, giving sleeper hold on apron onto Great Muta. Mm-hmm. Shinsuke Nakamura did the exact same spot during the match. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is they are teasing how people, you know, remember. Well, if you don't remember any of that from like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, it's just that. It's new, you know, you can still watch that. But if you remember old matches from 20, 25 years ago, that there's like, whoa, I've seen this one. Oh my gosh. You know, like almost like a sequel. It really, you know, stimulate your like memory lane. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Very unique character, especially Hakushi.
Yeah, and then very first Hakushi match, if you remember, he juiced, right? And with this, the Tokyo Dome match.
Lots. And, it was just all over the place. Muta's paint was coming off, yeah.
Yeah, Great Muta used Hakushi's blood. He spelled death with blood on a piece of wood, you know, the graveyard wood, you know. That was death. And this time at the Yokohama Arena, same scene, almost kind of sequel, right? He used his pointing finger from the forehead of Hakushi and spelled it the end, like your scary movie. Yeah. So it was very interesting that if you knew both matches, you get a lot more out of it. Of course, you can watch that match alone. You know, this Yokohama match, it was really, really... very spectacular, right?
Yeah, over the top. Everything was pretty over the top.
Yeah, and they made sure that every matchup was made. You know, Maru Fuji and Sting a little bit.
That was nice, yeah.
Yeah, and even Akira and Muta. and Darby Allin's introduction to Japanese fans. So he did his signature moves. And it wasn't even, I mean, if you think about Great Muta and Sting and third member of the team, is like, who is that, right? But he did real well for a newcomer, I think.
He skateboarded down the ramp.
That was good. That was good, like a today's kid, yeah.
And it said bye-bye on his skateboard.
Yeah, he did. That was the whole theme. Great Muta's paint on the face said bye-bye too. So it was just... the whole theme was just right there. And it was pretty much first time in years and years that the Jinsei did this Hakushi gimmick. And he came back with this new, brand new costume to be just basic Buddhist costume, right? You know, like your Japanese myth. This Jinsei's Henro thing actually goes back to like 1,200 years, you know, as a Japanese legend, you know, the Kukai, the Buddhist monk that goes to 88 spiritual place within Shikoku, and you are the pilgrim traveling there. And Shinzaki makes each stop. I mean, Hakushi makes stop. Mm-hmm. And that was like one of the stops that he made this time. Does that make any sense?
It's an esoteric idea to Judeo-Christian West, but I think it's making sense. Yes. No, it's very interesting because a lot of the nuance about the Hakushi character, it's hard to just blurt out and explain. It's not so clear. It doesn't have to be completely understood for pro wrestling. That's
yeah, but he's not a ghost. He's the actual pilgrim character. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, so this, if you know more about it, you know, you get more out of it. Yeah. And all this kanji writing on his whole body.
If you had to sum up what that said for people that didn't know, what would you say?
Oh, it's like Bible writing, you know, the okyo. Yeah.
Kind of like scripture.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, like initially when he went to WWE back in 95, people thought it was actual tattoo all over his face and body. Yeah,
there had been nothing like that. There was never a character that looked quite like that.
Matt Bloom did it a little bit, you know.
He did it later. Tensai.
Yeah, very similar, right? It's a sticker, sticker tattoo, but those kanji writing on your body. Yeah,
I think Matt Bloom's a lot of those were real too. Oh, but he did have the White Angel style stick on his face and such, right?
Yeah. Short-lived, but they kind of tried the same character, I guess, a little bit. Yeah. But this, you know, it had to be Hakushi who, you know, who had to be in this Great Muta final match. I mean, like a closing chapter of Great Muta.
Very clear message to everyone, it's over.
Yeah, for Keiji Muto, you know, Keiji Muto the wrestler and Great Muta the character, two different person, right?
So very different.
It was a final night for Great Muta character. Yeah. You had to have Sting in there. Yeah. You had to have Marufuji in there. You had to have Hakushi in there. You had to have Akira in there. Pretty much made a lot of sense.
And I think for most of the people that took part in the match, including Sting, Muta, Akira, Hakushi, and outside the ring, Great Kabuki, I think this might have been the last appearance for a lot of those guys as these
characters. Obviously, it's Stinger's last appearance in Japan. Mm-hmm. He probably won't be making more tours. Mm-hmm. Right. Great Kabuki said if it was end of Great Kabuki, Great Muta, that would be the end of Great Kabuki too. Hmm. He wouldn't come into the ring and do the nunchucks anymore. And the mist, blowing the mist thing. Yeah. And Akira won't be doing Akira character either. Hmm. Oh, I guess. Yeah.
Kind of like grand finale for a lot of these guys in some ways.
This meeting is being recorded.
Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Did I lose it? I think something just disconnected and connected.
Just about half a second, yes.
Okay, all good.
Okay. I'm good. Yeah. Anyhow, so that's right. That was the final appearance of Great Muta, final appearance of Sting, final appearance of original Great Kabuki. And yeah, probably it was the last time, you know, Shinzaki doing Hakushi then. Mm. No reason to become Hakushi if right. it wasn't for Great Muta. Yeah. For tonight, we're talking about Hakushi and, you know, the wrestler and the promoter, the producer, Jinsei Shinzaki. Yeah, actually, he and Great Sasuke have been running Michinoku Pro Wrestling over a good, better part of 20 years. That back in 2003, when Great Sasuke went to, you know, to run for public office in Iwate Prefecture, and he won the election, and it was spring of 2003, Jinsei Shinzaki took over the company as a president. I mean, real president of Michinoku Pro Wrestling. I mean, never retired. It was interesting that in English-speaking world, American fans, is it the same Hakushi, right? I thought he was retired, something like that, right?
Sure.
Yeah, but he's been running Michinoku Pro Wrestling without retiring as active wrestler all this time. In 2003, he became president of Michinoku Pro Wrestling. In 2005, he formed Sendai Girls Pro Wrestling with Meiko Satomura. Huh. Yeah, it's not known that he had this vision. Gaia Girls, you know, Chigusa Nagayo's Gaia Girls company, mm-hmm. they closed out, you know, closed shop, you know, like basically stopped running, you know, wrestling company. It was just, that was the end of Gaia Girls, April of 2005. And Shinzaki, you know, seeing something in Satomura, like, went to talk to her. He's like, what are you going to do after this Gaia Japan? Like, and she thought she was going to go in America and go to school or something. And she had no plan. And Meiko Satomura, as you see today, she is not the kind of wrestler working under somebody.
No.
She's a leader. You know what I'm saying?
Clearly.
If anybody be running a new company or training new wrestler or to start a new brand new company, that Satomura and Shinzaki got together and formed Sendai Girls Pro Wrestling in 2005 as a part of Michinoku Project Company. Isn't that interesting? Mm. That's why it's Sendai Girls, based in Miyagi Prefecture, Sendai, way up north, just the sister company of Michinoku Pro Wrestling, running in the same area. And it was the Satomura's vision that she would not get help from existing wrestlers, just Satomura and everybody else is rookie. She'll train rookie from scratch and debut them for Sendai Girls. It was a very, very interesting way to start, because when you start independent company or new company, several of, you know, your top position come from someplace else, huh? Mm-hmm. You know, like with the wrestlers who worked elsewhere. But it was Satomura and Shinzaki's vision that the only name wrestler would be Meiko Satomura and everybody else would be rookie. And that worked. That the red top and bottom, Sendai Girls, and it was that the place, like, rookie against Dynamite Kanzai, rookie against Aja Kong, rookie against Mariko Yoshida, rookie against Kyoko Inoue or something like that. It's just like, wow, everything is like a challenge. It really worked. And I used to go Sendai just to attend their card. Yeah. I mean, took bullet train to go Sendai Girls match. And now that the Sendai Girls, you know, 17 years later, you have like people like Chihiro Hashimoto. And, you know what I'm saying?
One of my favorites. She's fantastic. Mm-hmm. She even appeared on some of the men's shows late last year on All Japan.
And she was an amateur wrestling champion.
Yeah, one of the best in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Still trains every day.
Yep. So Satomura method of training and running company and running dojo is still there. And it's very interesting that, now that Meiko Satomura herself is traveling all over the world, and basically Chihiro Hashimoto took over the dojo side of the business, and the second, third generations of wrestlers, you know, with Sendai Girls. But the Sendai Girl is another company that has home base up in Sendai. Isn't that interesting?
So when it started out, was it just a part of Michinoku Pro, or was it its own promotion from the get-go? How
Own
did that start?
promotion, but the parent company was called Michinoku Project.
Right,
Michinoku,
okay.
the company entity is called Michinoku Project, and Michinoku Project ran the men's side Michinoku Pro Wrestling and women's division Sendai Girls. It eventually became two separate, stock and two separate company now. Yeah, well, when at the same time that Shinzaki started, running his ramen franchise and Tokushima Ramen, he has like a three restaurant now, and now he's doing it's called Kiroi Takoyaki. It's a takoyaki with curry sauce. You have to explain that to the English speaking world.
It's like black,
But
right?
takoyaki is like a round thing, with.
Yeah, so a takoyaki is like a squid
Yeah, well,
ball,
it's like an
like a,
octopus.
or excuse me, octopus ball. Squid
Yeah,
is
yeah.
ika. That's different.
Right. Takoyaki's taco is like
Octopus.
kind of octopus. Yeah, right.
Octopus
And
ball with it's kind of
curry
a
sauce on top of
curry
it.
sauce and the fish flakes and
Yeah, something like that, right.
some batter.
And right. And the Mitch that the Shinzaki's team drives the truck around, like a wrestling building or the right in front of the train station, and sells it.
Yeah, it's a real great example of kind of street food, or when you go to a
Yeah,
sports
yeah.
game, or you're
Soul
at a,
food. Yeah.
yeah, like you're at the picnic and you go over to the vendor and there's always, takoyaki or
Oh, okonomiyaki or yakitori
okonomiyaki,
or
yes, or
yeah, something like that. And also runs ramen. From like Tokushima Ramen, from like his hometown Tokushima, he franchised that up north. So he runs ramen house and the takoyaki house and wrestling company.
Wow, as an
And never
entrepreneur,
retired. Never retired. So
doesn't
it's like,
he was old. When
yeah.
did he start the restaurants?
Oh, right around the same time that he took over company because he needed more of a cash flow. That Michinoku, I told you about this, like up north, that during snow season, you could only run so many shows in December and January.
That's right.
That's why Michinoku, during January and February, they go down south, like Kyushu Island, and join, have joint shows, Kyushu's independent company, and run their house shows. Or come to Tokyo twice a year and run their precious Korakuen premiere shows. June and December every year. And also Michinoku Pro Wrestling became a place where Toryumon graduate from Mexico, Ultimo Dragon Wrestling School. They graduate like a younger wrestler who could either go to New Japan or All Japan or Pro Wrestling NOAH, but some wrestler choose to be with Michinoku Pro Wrestling, Yapeman 1, Yapeman 2, the wrestler they have now, that is basically most of them come from Ultimo Dragon's the Toryumon school in Mexico. Yeah, you see, like people like Taiji Ishimori were signed with Pro Wrestling NOAH in New Japan, and a lot of them that the Toryumon graduate would work Dragon Gate, right? Yeah, but some guys choose Michinoku Pro Wrestling and they're there to stay.
Isn't that where Kano started?
Ken O is actual protege of Shinzaki from Tokushima, that hometown.
So
Yeah.
there's a pretty deep connection between those two.
Oh, actual protege that Ken O came to Shinzaki. He wanted to be a pro wrestler. Ken O actually is national Kenpo karate champion.
Yeah, he was like the youngest champion at the time, like 23
Yeah.
years old.
And he didn't want to work, go to established group, that he went straight to his hometown hero, Shinzaki, and want to be a wrestler. And Shinzaki had this method that you can debut KO right there, but Shinzaki had this idea that you don't want to start KO in the first match guy, right? So he sent KO into Super Dolphins Okinawa Pro Wrestling for 1 year under mask. you know, people didn't know about it because what happened to Kenho, right? He announced that he's, you know, joining up and signed with Michinoku. All of a sudden, he's gone. Actually, Shinzaki sent young Kenho to Super Dolphins Okinawa Pro Wrestling. At the time, in that way down in Okinawa, Super Dolphin was running 300 shows a year, every day, same place. So when he came back 1 year later, he already had 300 matches under his different identity. And he was ready to be put in the main event spot. Then a few years later, Kenho asked Shinzaki, I want to work pro wrestling in NOAH. Okay, I'll set up this for you. And basically, Shinzaki negotiated with pro wrestling in NOAH so Kenho can join. So the Kenho has been with pro wrestling in NOAH the past, 7 years or so now? So right, the strong connection. It's now an interesting method to send rookie to, at the time, Okinawa Pro Wrestling. You know, then nobody knew where he was because he was wearing mask, had a different identity, and had the typical Japanese Lucha Libre style match, you know, night in, night out for 300 nights. And you already had 300 matches under your belt, and then came back as a good worker. Interesting, huh?
It's kind of like a mini excursion.
Yeah, because people don't really follow like match result of Okinawa Pro Wrestling, right? At the time when Kenho was Okinawa Pro Wrestling, then active Kyoko Kimura was there too, mm-hmm. under mask. Yeah, and also eighth grade Hana Kimura doing local teen idol.
Plus, you know, Okinawa is almost like a different country. Like
Hawaii, going to Hawaii, huh?
Right. It's almost like you're in a different kind of world.
Country. Yeah, because 70% of the landscape is like U.S. base.
Right. There's a lot of U.S. franchises there.
Yeah. And Okinawa and Naha and the big U.S. base with 150,000 soldiers there. Yeah. So that's like we have to have, you know, study the real history of it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Yeah. So Okinawa is Japan, but it has a real mixed culture, you know. And up until 50 years ago, they were driving right hand side of the road too, using dollar too, U.S. dollar.
Yeah, it's like a extended American base or.
Yeah,
American
Okinawa,
land.
Yeah, because Okinawa didn't become part of Japan until 1972. Yeah.
So going there is—it's not quite going to a different country, but it's definitely
almost
going somewhere to get different kind of experience.
After Super Dolphin quit Michinoku Pro Wrestling, he ran Osaka Pro Wrestling for 5-6 years. Then he moved to Okinawa and started Okinawa Pro Wrestling with Okinawa characters. Like in International Avenue, it's a tourist spot, and running wrestling show every night, Monday through Friday, Saturday, and had like 300 shows a year. It's a great place to for a rookie to learn, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really acknowledged, and it wasn't like really publicized that the Kenho under the mask was working in Okinawa Pro Wrestling. But when he came back to Michinoku Pro Wrestling, had a real strong title match program against Fujita Junior Hayato, that it was like Kenho was ready to become some big star. Yeah.
Mm.
But that was Shinzaki's vision. So he made Kenho, and he made basically Meiko Satomura's Sendai Girls Pro Wrestling. And these two things hasn't been really acknowledged. Yeah.
He's always been, I guess not always, but since, 2003 or when he started doing more behind-the-scenes stuff, he's been more of a behind-the-scenes character. He's been active, but he hasn't been out in front of the camera or anything.
He never retired, and he still work matches for Michinoku regular house shows, though. But he will never put himself in the main event. Right. They have Tohoku Junior Heavyweight Champion wrestlers like Musashi and all those guys. Yeah, like generations young. I mean, like 20 years younger than Shinzaki, right?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people talk about after seeing his match this week, and they say, wow, he looks the same as he did 30
They're
years
exactly the
ago.
same.
His
Good
body's the
shape.
same, 56 years old.
Yeah. Right. So like people thought, is that the same Hakushi from 1996?
Right,
Yeah,
it
he is.
is.
Yeah. So it's interesting that I'm glad that this is our opportunity to talk about, Jinsei's legacy. Yeah. Because it hasn't been talked about all that much, because Michinoku Pro Wrestling is not based in Tokyo. But there
But
are companies out, exist. Yeah.
he really made an impact whenever he appeared somewhere, even only what a couple appearances with New Japan, couple
yeah.
sh pretty short time with WWF, and not always an active. He's been active, but he's part time, and he's just not been in the ring so much. But every time he shows up, it's always something people talk about.
Well, he still works basically full time, though. But it's not like your New Japan full time, like 150 matches a year.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Smaller
Yeah,
shows.
he does. Yeah, he does make guest appearance for All Japan or Dragon Gate or other companies. Yes, and always in character. Yeah. So there's this type of wrestler that will probably pretty much look the same, forever.
I think so.
Yeah. And also, well, we can't forget that we talked about 1996 New Japan's Tokyo Dome card, Great Muta against Hakushi, but there was night the Sumo Palace that Michinoku's like Michinoku Pro Wrestling's Tokyo, like a super show at the Sumo Palace. That was Undertaker against Hakushi in Japan. Yeah, that's big.
There was some pretty interesting press before those matches with, and right before the match, when it's before it started, Shinzaki.
Actually went back to New York and got out of grave, and they videotaped it. Yeah, because they
And
buried Hakushi in New York, right? So he has to come back like a zombie, and they videotaped it. Yeah.
he had the Undertaker's decapitated head, and he brought it to him with in the ring.
Right, that too. Oh yeah. So those storyline thing is very careful, carefully produced, much like how Great Muta pays attention to little details. So they're similar in that. Yeah. So pretty much you thought that this Great Muta's final bye-bye, match, Hakushi was the VIP, like a pretty much, most valuable player.
He was a very important part of it. Everybody had their played their role, did it
Yeah.
perfectly. And I think Darby and Marufuji came off very
Yeah.
interesting and exciting. Sting felt like almost like the Undertaker. It's kind of invincible.
Right. That's the same Sting from decades ago, yes. And Sting and Great Muta or Keiji Muto had their history in Japan and America. Yeah. And the post-match promo, Sting was saying, "This man made me better." Like
Right.
their WCW in the days. Yeah, because they worked around the horn, all the house shows, single match night after night, and they really better each other, I think. Yeah.
So I think that's a good account of what Jinsei Suzuki's career has been like. Although, you know what we didn't talk about? We probably should. When
What?
Shinzaki and Hayabusa showed up in ECW.
Right. Hayabusa and Shinzaki Jinsei against Sabu and RVD then.
That's
Right.
right. Heat Wave
Yeah.
1998.
Dayton, Ohio, was it?
I
Something like that.
believe so.
Yeah, because they drove from Michigan. I remember that. Yeah. Yeah,
That was a
they.
reintroduction of Hakushi to the American audience. Smaller audience, but
Right. And Hayabusa and Hakushi together, they worked All Japan Pro Wrestling, like almost like a real tag team tournament. And also, they were the All Asian Tag Team Champions. During this real world tag team tournament in December, the traditional All Japan Tag Team Tournament, they had matches against people like Stan Hansen, Terry Goldie, Steve Williams, much like
Misawa Kobashi,
Misawa Kobashi. Yeah, so they went through
Kawada,
that
yeah.
too. Yeah.
Everybody. They had a kind of hot time in 1997. And then in 1998, they traveled to the States.
But he was never signed with All Japan, that he wanted to be a Michinoku guy working big shows. So brought the Thunder back to hometown too, because he was on network TV every week for that time period.
Yeah, he's a big attraction type wrestler.
And the fantasy character, never, you know, like a brave character, you know, as long as he's in the wrestling building, he just stays in character that pretty much that the never lose it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's like a statue almost.
Yeah.
He's like a, you know, unmovable statue.
Yeah. Yeah. And all his wrestling moves are original, you know, that it's not Keiji Muto's leg sweep dragon screw. It's like a opposite, you know, direction.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And not the camel crutch, he got it from the Sheik and Sabu, but he does it like a, you know, that Gokuraku Gatame, that's made it into his own form. And he does this backward pele kick too, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's all kind of twisted differently and made it, you know, make it into like original move. He's very careful about that too.
Walking the ropes and...
Right.
Flying it shoulder was tackle. Not
a lot during this WWE days because only person he walks on rope was Undertaker. So he didn't do that in America. Yeah. When he worked Giant Baba's tag team, the only one Tokyo Dome card Giant Baba had, he was in the six-man tag team package against Giant Baba, and he walked the rope holding Giant Baba's hand.
Was that at the Tokyo Dome show?
Yep. Yeah. That was interesting. Yeah. So he worked a lot of big shows, but stayed being Michinoku person. Yeah.
Quite humble.
Well, that's all in all, that's his company too. Yeah. So very interesting. It's like a local promoter, producer, and top wrestler, and character, and also entrepreneur. Yeah.
And he must have a... good health and a diet plan too. He's somebody
the way he's looking.
We all should look up to for somebody his age. He looks arguably better than he did 30 years ago. I mean, that was, I think, a really surprising thing to a lot of people, how he looked and how he wrestled.
Also, yeah, I almost forget that he gives the class at the seniors' home. You know that like a stretching. You know, like with music. Like a nursing home. He goes around nursing home and give class, like a
yoga kind of.
Yeah, classes. Yeah.
Wow.
The one he created.
It really is like a Buddhist priest.
Yeah, interesting. We should know more about him. Yeah.
I know he's not going to say so. He's too. He's
no,
too,
very humble, huh?
Too humble to say anything, but
he's a pilgrim.
He's the pilgrim. Yeah, the white angel.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Interesting. He lives it.
He's the real deal.
Yeah.
I think there's something very unique and different about him compared with other wrestlers. There is a different aura about him.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That's why I think people like Great Muta really respected him. Yeah.
He was really a perfect rival for the Great Muta character, huh?
Right. It's not for the whole year. You know, that when he becomes Great Muta, he takes certain character for... So, yeah.
This meeting is being recorded.
So Hakushi was Great Muta's perfect opponent. Yes.
So, let's wrap it up for today because that really does it. But if we want to contact you and have questions or comments, where can we find
Twitter,
you?
@ Fumihiko Dayo, FUMIHIKODAYO, Fumihiko Dayo on Twitter, or just Fumi Saito on Facebook.
And on Twitter, I'm @ Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER. That's it for now. So until next week, Fumi, take it away.
So long from Tokyo.